Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I'm going to start with last night's major showdown, the matchup, the one we had all circled on the calendar, all the hype going into Lakers v. Nets. And there was a lot of hype coming in. Didn't essentially live up to the hype because guys were banged up, but there was hype coming in. Let me get one piece of history out of the way before we start to talk about the future. That piece of history was LeBron James breaking the 35,000-point barrier.
Going for a milestone here, Kevin Harlan, by LeBron James.
Yeah, he's only becoming one of three, but we know that he's not passing anybody, but he is getting a certain number, which is pretty stunning. You think of that?
35,000 points.
It's a big number. 35,000. Here is the list of NBA players who have scored more than 35,000 points. K.A.J., Carl, LeBron, that's it. Not Mike, not Irv, not Lair, not Kobe, nobody else. Just those three guys. And LeBron did it faster than the other two. And as you can tell from this season, he is not done yet, not even close. But enough with history. Let's get to the future, because if last night's Nets-Lakers game at Staples was a finals teaser, I like that. I'm here for it. I would not turn down five or six or seven games of that in a few more months. In fact, I would take an entire series of LeBron hitting shots like this.
It's time to catch and shoot. Just give it to LeBron. He hit that fadeaway.
There it is from behind the backboard. He hit it. A two-pointer. I don't know how he got that to go. LeBron was behind the backboard in front of the Nets bench with only 1.9 on the clock, and he swished it.
I'll put an H on you if you're playing horse.
Yeah, it was a spectacular shot.
Well said, fellas. Lakers radio. So he's knocking down impossible J's like that. And even the old guy can get up and throw down dunks like this.
2% free throw shooter.
Oh, LeBron.
He comes off that like he's on a catapult. He's 36, and he looks like he's on that cover of SI that you were showing a couple minutes ago, Reggie.
With a hammer. I'd be up for that. Like I would be up for a series of James Harden doing things like this on the big stage.
There's only one basketball. These guys understand how to play with one another and how to win. As another three here by the Brooklyn Nets. KD is loving this on the sideline.
Just doing our thing, catching up. I would take a series of Kyrie Irving clowning LeBron for missing a free throw by asking the Lakers, quote, "That's your best free throw shooter." I mean, sign me up for all that. Just don't get this twisted and think that last night would be how that series would go, because there were some big pieces missing. You know, pieces like Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis. LA, though, also missing Dennis Schroeder. That matters. I'm not going to say that last night's 109-98 win for the Nets doesn't count. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying go ahead and slap a fat asterisk on it. Steve Nash even knows that.
You know, I don't think we're getting too carried away. You know, it's we played a solid game and got a good win on the road, but super early, we got a lot to grow and to develop into. And it's just really important that we take every day as an opportunity to get better, regardless of the results. But it also tastes sweet when you go out west and win some games.
It's a good point. Somebody then followed that up by asking Steve Nash his thoughts on Alvin DeLauro.
Well, Alvin's incredible. He deserves an incredible amount of praise.
I love that somebody worked that into that presser yesterday. That was great. Then you got Kyrie. Kyrie knows that they didn't win anything significant last night or anything that really matters.
We'll see them down the line again, and we look forward to it with a whole entire healthy Lakers team. That's what we really wanted. And so I'm looking forward to the challenge and seeing them down the line.
Look, I don't want to split hairs, and maybe it's a matter of semantics, but that was not a finals preview. That was a finals teaser. Because when Schroeder was ruled out due to the league's health and safety protocols, that meant the Lakers had to go without two of their top three scorers. Also, they did not have their primary guy that they were going to use to throw at Kyrie defensively. So if I'm a Laker fan, I'm not tripping. I'm not freaked out by a loss like that. I'm freaked out by something from last night, but not by that loss. Just because that's not an official's finals preview does not mean that it didn't matter. I mean, it did. It just mattered a lot more for the Nets than it did for the Lakers. Now, if the Nets lose that game, that's a kick in the package. If you want to be a legitimate threat to win an NBA title, you have to do what the Nets did last night. You've got to go into Staples, and you have to beat the Lakers while they're down. Failing to do that, even without KD, would have raised some serious questions to me. Like, if a team of LeBron James, AC Fresh, and the rest of the Lakers' depth had beaten the Nets last night, that would have been bad for the Nets. Bad for the Nets. Nobody would have talked about the fact that the Nets were without KD. Not when the Lakers were without two of their top guys. And everybody would have talked about the fact that maybe the Nets aren't ready for prime time, that you can't just throw together a bunch of talented guys with a first-time head coach and expect them to get it done. It just doesn't work like that. So, the Nets had to do more than show up. Even just winning would not have been enough. They had to win a certain way. And they did. Because last night, as much as LeBron did, it was not enough. And the Nets proved that even without Durant, they're still explosive. That offensive Voltron, even when it's missing a part, is still pretty damn good. And they make scoring pretty damn easy. It's not just about Kyrie and Harden getting to the rim. It's the entire team and its ability to shoot the three. It was about Joe Harris going for 21 last night, including six threes. It was about TLC hitting five threes. It's about the entire Nets team hitting 18 in the second half. It's about a team that has 65 threes in the last three games, which is among the all-time great runs from deep in league history. And they've done it without Kevin Durant. So imagine adding a 7-foot-tall walking bucket to that offense. And you can see why teams in the East are sweating. They can score, we know that. They can shoot, we know that. But they're not just about handing the ball to one of the big three and letting them work. They've got five guys hitting better than 40% from beyond the arc. Now, nobody's expecting them to keep that up the entire year. That'd be impossible. But they can shoot it now. Question is, can they defend? That'll be the question, not just now, but for the rest of the regular season and the postseason. Can they do enough defensively to beat a team four times in seven games? We'll see. Do they have enough on the interior right now? Or do they add a piece or two before the playoffs so they don't get punished by Joel Embiid or, I don't know, Anthony Davis? Speaking of Davis, Laker fans, if I were you, that's the one thing I would be worried about. I'd be more worried about that than the Nets. I'd be more worried about yourself. I tried to warn you before. I tried to tell you that AD would not be back as soon as you thought. I tried to tell you that no matter what the team was saying and no matter what you want to believe about it being a 2 to 3 week timetable, that was not going to be the case. And then that was confirmed by Frank Vogel last night.
Did Anthony end up getting reevaluated back in LA, and did anything new come out of his visit with team doctors?
Yep, he was evaluated tonight, actually, and just confirmed a calf strain. He's going to be out for 4 weeks. We want to try to put this fully behind him and be conservative with it just to make sure that it's fully healed before he's back.
All right, so now it's 4 weeks. It was 2 to 3 weeks, and now it's 4 weeks, and I'm just going to assume that it's not 4 weeks. I mean, 4 weeks if everything goes perfectly. And if it has to take longer, so be it. If I'm a Laker fan, I'm not worried about the Nets right now. I'm really not worried about much of anything except that calf and that Achilles right now. Davis and the Lakers have to do everything they can and take as long as they can and make sure this guy's as close to 100 for when it matters. Last night didn't really matter. It mattered more to the Nets than the Lakers. But the next 4 weeks matter a hell of a lot. And you want to make sure that this guy's right. Do not rush him back sooner than you have to. Something else I want to talk about a little bit later on. I want to get into KD. I think a lot of people forget, before KD injured his Achilles, Kevin Durant, not LeBron James. Kevin Durant may have been the best player in the world. And yes, I said it. And I know one person who absolutely does believe that. Kevin Durant.
I'm Kevin Durant.
You know he wants LeBron badly. You know Kevin Durant, because he's Kevin Durant, wants to showcase to the world that he, in fact, is the best player in the world, not LBJ. Honest question. I know if these two teams do play in the finals, Durant would be the first to say, I want LeBron. Something tells me LeBron is not going to jump in front of the line to take KD. Am I right? Something else I think deep down. Something tells me KD and Kyrie have bonded over wanting to beat LeBron. I mean, of course they both know this guy is historic. This guy's one of the best ever. Arguably the GOAT. We all know that. But you can't tell me that both these guys don't think they deserve some of the credit for the attention that LeBron gets. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender and made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business which takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, rough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating an old shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: old-fashioned, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Jalen Green is my guest. Jalen, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, I'm great. It's great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. I want to make sure the listeners understand, Jalen, you are 19. You just turned 19. You're putting up enormous numbers in the G League. How is your life right about now? What's it like?
It's smooth. You know, it's different in the bubble. You got to get used to it. And then on the court, you just got to adapt. But overall, it's been fun. I'm just real happy to play again.
Jalen Green's my guest. I like that. It's been smooth. You know, again, so people understand, you were recruited by Kentucky, Arizona, Memphis, Auburn, Oregon, and more. And the thinking is you would have been the first pick in the draft last year if you had been allowed to go straight to the draft from high school. So what's it been like playing in the G League?
It's been different. You know, it's a higher level. I haven't played a game since last year, and that was a high school game. So, I mean, right now I'm just going through an adaption, trying to make that transition over. But it's been fun. I'm learning a lot on the court, so I'm just trying to pick up on it.
Talking to Jalen Green, like, if you and I were to go back a little bit, there are these great stories about you going to some of those legendary UCLA men's gym runs in the summer of 2017. Brandon Jennings was there, KD was there, and you had to wait for a little bit to get onto the featured game. When you got your chance, you were guarding Durant. What do you remember about that day?
That day was fun. That was my first time, like, really in a gym with all pros. So it was exciting for me. I was a little nervous, but when I stepped on the court, it was fine. Guarding KD was crazy. I know he didn't see me at all. I think he had like 2 threes on me. But I had got and one on Devin Booker, so it was fun. It was fun.
Dude, how'd that feel?
It felt really good. It's so good.
You know it. Jalen Green joining us. Then Bobby Brown, who played for the Rockets, told Ramona Shelburne, quote, "I'm pretty sure KD scored on him a few times at first, but then he got out on a fast break. I'm sure it was a regular dunk for him, but everybody in the gym just looked at each other like, oh, bleep." End of quote. What do you remember about that dunk, and how big of a statement do you think you made with that?
I think I made a pretty big statement. I know it was like a one-hand powerful dunk, but I think that was their first time like really seeing me, or like my first time really putting people on notice that was in the pros. So, I mean, it was fun. I was just trying to compete that day.
We're talking to Jalen Green. So I mentioned off the top that you were a McDonald's All-American, but the high school All-Star games were not played last year because of the pandemic. I know that was something that you were really looking forward to. How disappointing was it not to get the chance to participate in those games on that big stage?
It was very disappointing. You know, due to COVID, we couldn't really play, but everybody in my class that got invited to the games had to feel the same thing I felt. You know, that's a kid's dream. Coming up through high school, working hard, trying to get to that McDag, but it didn't happen. So it was a sad day, but I mean, it was a lot going on in the world, so we just had to move forward.
Talking to Jalen Green. Now, you're playing for my guy, Brian Shaw. I was at UC Santa Barbara at the same time as B. Shaw. What's it like to play for him, and what have you learned from him?
It's great. I've learned a lot of things from him. One thing that he always tells us is everyone's watching. So carry yourself as a pro, on and off the court. And, you know, he's played with Kobe, Larry Bird. He's played with a lot of greats in the league, so he has a lot of knowledge. I just be trying to pick his brain about things he did, things Kobe did, and just things I need to work on to be better.
I'm glad to hear that. I love Brian Shaw. He put our program on the map. He always carried himself like a pro, even from a really young age. That's a guy who gets it. High basketball IQ. Now, the team also has a number of former NBA players, guys like Reggie Hearn and Bobby Brown, Jarrett Jack, and more. You've mentioned you've learned a lot from Hearn and Brown. Like, what kind of things do they talk to you about?
Just about their life experiences and what they went through, and how I should handle it when it comes up, or just try to put me on what they went through, so I have the knowledge and have an alternative route to go around it or carry myself about it.
Talking to Jalen Green for a few more moments. Also, Jarrett Jack is a great guy to rap with and a great guy to talk to. He was talking about a conversation he had with you after a game. Quote, the one thing in this league, what people will do all the time, they're looking around for the rookies, end of quote. In other words, like, you've got a target on your back. What's it like knowing that everybody's going to try and test you, come at you, and that you do have that target on your back?
I mean, I'm pretty used to it. I've been having a target on my back since high school, my freshman year when ESPN rankings came out. So I'm pretty used to it. Right now, I'm just trying to focus on my game and just trying to adapt.
Let me ask you this. When D'Angelo Russell was with Golden State, he came to watch you play when you were in high school. All right, so that says a lot about where you were. You also famously worked out with Steph Curry when you were in high school. What about that workout? What did you take away from that, especially in the way that Steph moves on the court?
But you said it already, just moving on the court. You know, Steph is always moving without the ball. So we did a lot of drills, just moving out the ball and then coming off and shooting. And then one thing I learned from it is just, like, listen to your body and take care of your body. He knows everything that's going on with his body and why something's wrong with his shot. He knows that his legs need to be in it more or whatever it is. So he just always told me to listen to my body and learn about my body.
So last thing, what about that? Like, body as temple, right? You are what you eat. You want to fuel with the right stuff. Now, you recently did a video where you talked about your 10 essential items. The first thing on the list was pizza rolls. For those who do not know pizza rolls or do not appreciate or get pizza rolls, lay it out for me. What makes them so great?
Well, if your favorite food is pizza, it's a little bite-sized breading with pepperoni and cheese in it, and it's just like you could take it on the go. It's a little quick meal, takes 13 minutes to warm up, and it's a good snack. So
good, yeah. Dude, it is, by the way, it is my favorite food, so I am gonna roll like that. Now, you're also a big Starburst guy, specifically the pinks. If the pinks are the best, what is the worst Starburst flavor?
Yellow is the worst for sure.
How come?
I mean, it's just, I'm not a big fan of lemon and or whatever it is, and I know that's the lemon flavor, so not too big of a fan on that one.
All right, good. He's a guard for the G League Ignite. He's having a big year there. Gold medals again with USA Basketball at the U17 and U19 World Championships. Jalen, great to have you on the show. Nice to talk to you, and I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you for having me.
All right, so how about some unfinished business? Why don't we go back to the end of yesterday's program? And in order to set it up, let me read you some reaction. A number of you have been waiting for this because the reaction came in after the program, throughout the night, and then throughout the morning. Here is a sampling. Rome, R.I.P. Ritt, after yesterday's performance. Remember how Ritt killed Tom Hanks? Well, Ritt got killed yesterday, apparently. Van Smack. So did you, Ritt, apparently. Van Smack. And to close out your Thursday, Ritt hits the black ice and wrecks the day for you. Thanks. Mark in parts unknown. Well done, Mark. Mark is the guy yesterday who predicted that Ritt would hit the black ice, swerve out of control, and wreck the day. And then he came in today to remind me that that's exactly what happened. What he's saying is, I called my shot, and he did. Yeah, Ritt, I'm looking at you on TV right now. I don't see any of your stupid gestures right now, Ritt, after what happened yesterday. Wells, in the 360 tweets, if you're on your way to work right now, then you probably aren't Garrett Ritt.
If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
Rome Slice. He sound dropped me. Regards, Taylor Heinicke, after Ritt dropped that St. Louis Battlehawks bomb.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Richard in Chicago. Richard in Chicago becoming more and more prominent. Planet Wilson 1 tweets, St. Louis unemployment line.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
St. Louis unemployment line.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Signed Ritt. Rome changing, or war Rome changing the locks on Ike's office door after that Taylor Heinicke stunt yesterday. Chioff. Inglewood is in to represent. Josh in Inglewood. Welp. It was nice knowing you, Ritt. Thanks for the laughs, Gramps. Now pack your bleep and take your shine box with you. Ryan in Sacktown. Mr. Rome, how can I send my resume for Ritt's open position? I promise not to eat on TV, and I'll beat Adam Hawk to the office every morning. All right. So this sets it up. Something obviously happened. And if you missed it, let me backtrack a little bit. Thursdays are a day when something always happens, and it's almost always bad, really bad. And the reason for that, yes, Ritt, I'm looking at you. The reason for that is Alvin DeLauro homeschools on Thursday. Alvin has set up this deal where he stays at home on Thursday to be with the kids and homeschool them, which means Ritt, and I have to defend Ritt, Ritt has been asked to do the impossible, sit in Alvin's chair. Alvin was initially asked to do the impossible, and that was to sit and then follow in Brian Albert's chair. And Alvin, if we're being really honest, you know, you really weren't comfortable in that chair for years. That was a hard chair to sit in. However, Alvin says, dude, it took a decade.
Dude, no.
Maybe not a decade, but 7 or 8 years for sure. So you can imagine where it's impossible for a no-talent hack like Ritt to move up to the front row and sit in that chair. I understand this. The problem with Ritt is he has this unbelievably unwarranted sense of self-confidence. Like, not only does he sit in that chair, he sits in it like it's his chair, and he owns it, and he acts like he could do a better job at Alvin's job than Alvin. Much like when he sat in my chair and acted like he could do this better than I can do it. That's just Ritt. That's part of his inherent charm. So bad things happen because he's way too overconfident. And then he settles in and just starts firing buttons. I've told Ritt over and over and over again, you get that plane up in the air, and then 3 hours later, you land that plane. And don't do anything in between. And Ritt's like, sound library. And just starts firing buttons. As an example, remember the day when somebody called to commiserate and share her thoughts? Diana in Niagara Falls, she called on the day, the anniversary of the passing of our beloved horse, Shared Belief. Now, you know what that horse meant to me and still means to me. And Diana loved the horse, and I love the horse. And apparently, Ritt could not wait to put his stamp on that moment. Remember this? Niagara Falls, Diane. It's good to have you. Diane, how are you?
War Lady Clones.
Damn, Ritt.
How are you? Not going to take too much to elevate these.
All right, Diane, my bad. So Diane wants to say, I really want to talk about the big horse, Roman. I'm really sorry that your horse passed away. And Ritt's just like, War Lady Clones!
War Lady Clones!
I'm like, way to stomp all over the moment, Ritt. My gosh. So we had a talking to. The problem with Ritt, when you talk to him, you never know if it's actually he's listening to anything. But I think I made my point, man. Dude, I'm not saying to play scared. I'm just saying, just don't get carried away. So every Thursday, I'm on thin ice. Everybody's on thin ice because of Ritt. We can't control the guy. We don't know what he's going to do. So we get through yesterday's program, and we're having a day. We're having fun. We're having a lot of fun yesterday. And then at the very end of the show, a moment that I'm looking forward to, a conversation with Taylor Heinicke. And I'd never spoken to him before, and I was anxious to talk to him, develop a new relationship with the program, and it's good. It's great. He comes on. He does the interview. I approach the interview the way I do all interviews. I'm prepped up. I'm ready to roll. I'm happy with it. And then the interview ends and we close the show, but not before Ritt has to once again put his own personal stamp on it. And it went even worse than that time he put his personal stamp on the shared belief moment. This is what happened yesterday at the end of the program. Taylor Heinicke, our guest. Taylor, great to have you on the show. Really appreciate the conversation. Hope we can do it again next season. Thanks for the time. That was nice.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Taylor. Great job.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Ritt. Ritt, Taylor, my apologies, Taylor. Ritt, you idiot. Dude, you have this guy, and he's a great story, and he's a great dude. He's going to think that I mocked him. Ritt, you idiot. Ritt, I cannot stress this enough, dude. I'm not even being funny. Do you understand that? I just didn't interview the guy. He's going to think I mocked him. Do not do that, ever, Ritt. I swear to God, if you do that again, you're fired. Do not do that after I talk to a guest. Damn, Ritt. You idiot, Ritt. Do you have any idea how hard it is to make these relationships and these connections? Dude, I'm not even kidding you on this one. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Pack your bleep up, Ritt. We're closed.
You see how I got that sponsor in there, too, in the middle of that tirade?
I mean, that was legit anger. All right, that was not for show. Like, I was really upset. And by the way, I'm still really upset about that. So we come off the air, and Ritt says, even my mom said, wow, Jim sounds like he's really angry. And Janet said to me, I can't believe you said, oh my God, on the radio. I said, you have to understand, that was a bad, bad deal. But it's not what it appears. Come to find out, Hawk was in the middle of this. Adam, exactly what did happen on the other side of the glass?
All right. So it's confession time. When you intro'd Taylor Heinicke, you discussed his background like you always do, and you mentioned that he was a quarterback for the St. Louis Battlehawks. Every time I hear the word St. Louis Battlehawks, I think of James Kelly just absolutely murdering those three words. And I immediately thought to myself, all right, James has been getting over on me a lot lately. I would like that sound drop pulled and ready to go at the ready, Garrett. And so I instructed Garrett to get that sound drop. He was not going to do it. I told him to...
He resisted? He said he didn't want to do it.
Yeah, Garrett was on his best behavior, because you'll remember that when we were doing the video store stuff, you talked about... old school porno theaters with 200 seats in it, and Garrett played a sound drop so bad that Tom DeCelestino literally dropped it. He dumped out of it. The sound drop was so egregious and so disgusting that it was dropped on the radio, so
right,
people didn't hear it. So Garrett was on his best behavior after that. And so when I told him to get that drop, he was a little apprehensive, and I said, no, do it, get it. I want to hammer this after the interview,
because I want my personal issues with James Kelly to take precedent over any relationship that my host might be building with a rising star in the NFL. That's smart, Hawk. All right, continue.
Unfortunately, I wasn't thinking clearly because emotions got the best of me. So I had Ritt loaded up.
Because the big head is in your head. He's got beachfront real estate in your head.
Correct.
All right.
And, you know, we're up against it there at the end because the interview had taken us
pretty
close. And
damn it, I'm going to get that soundbite in. I'm going to smash James Kelly. Because yes, we're up against it. Do it, Ritt. I said do it, Ritt. Do it or you're fired, Ritt. Did you do that?
I did all of that. Minus the you're fired thing. I was just like, fire it. Come on, go, go, go. Hit it. Go, play it. And he played it, and it was a little tight to when Mr. Heinicke left the conversation.
Let me stop you right there. You're already covering your own ass. It was a little tight, meaning
it doesn't matter like when he played it. It was going to work its way back to him, right? Out of context. Even if he didn't hear it himself, somebody close to him would have said, hey, Taylor, by the way, you know what Rome did? Right after you got off the air, or even 3 minutes after you got off the air, he played this St. Louis Battlehawks thing.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
And there would have been no context. They would not have understood because they don't know me and they don't know the show and they don't know James Kelly. And it would have gotten back. So not only did you put Ritt in a horrible position where Ritt's been annihilated online overnight, you put me in a horrible position. And for what? Because you can't fight back and James Kelly keeps kicking your ass.
All of this is correct. And I made a egregious mistake by having Garrett play the drop when he did. And then Garrett had to wear it on the air and on Twitter. And I couldn't officially take ownership of it until just now. So it's been a really long, 15 hours for Garrett. And I apologize. Garrett has made mistakes in the past. This one was all on me. That being said.
Dude, don't you wreck an apology with a that being said. Nothing being said. Like, you, there is your apology to him, and you definitely owe me an apology, because if you have an issue with him, imagine the issue you have with me right now. You made this about you, Hawk. You put him in a horrible spot. You put me in a worse spot with an NFL quarterback. And why? Because you made it about you. Haven't I always said to you, take care of the show and the show will take care of you? Let me add to that. Take care of you instead of the show and you get your ass fired.
Yes, you have. And I apologize to you as well. And without negating the apology to you or to Garrett.
Here it comes again, man. You obviously did not hear what I just said, but go ahead. I'll play along.
All right, very good. So I like to trace things back to the origin, okay? If Alvin was here, that never happens. If James Kelly never botched those three words, it never happens. And if Tom DeCelestino picks me up the way he picked Garrett up and dumps out of that drop, it never happens. I'm just saying.
All right, and let me just say this. Had you not instructed Ritt to do it, it never happens. Had you not made it about yourself, this never happens. Had you been professional, this never happens. Dude, I can't believe it. You literally apologized for it and then blamed everybody in the room. The only one you didn't blame was me. How is it? It's probably my fault.
No, it's not your fault at all.
It's Ritt's fault. And it's Alvin's fault, and it's Tom's fault, and it's Big Head's fault, but it's not my fault, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry that
you're
I not, don't
you're,
work
you're
with
sorry
smarter people.
That you're in this position, man. You're not sorry you did it. That's like the worst apology I think I've ever heard in my life. This is making me like Ritt. Like for once, this is not Ritt's fault. Dude, you could not have handled that any worse yesterday, I thought, until you tried to handle it just now. You just made it worse.
I apologize for making it worse.
Wow. All right, so there you have it. Ritt? Unlike Hawk, I will own it and apologize to you. Mr. President, I am sorry that I unloaded on you yesterday for you playing that sound drop at the end of the Taylor Heineke interview, because I thought you did that on your own.
Finally.
So my any credit card can offer cash back, but only Discover matches all the cash back that you earned at the end of your first year. It's like getting one of those birthday cards that's shaped like cash, so you already know there's cash inside before you open it up. But in this case, it's stuffed with your first year cash back match, and you don't even have to send a thank you note. How awesome is that? Darren Waller is my guest. Darren, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. It's good to visit with you. In fact, you're coming off a monster season. You just launched a podcast. You're working with your foundation. You're making moves in the music industry. So what was the start of the off season like for you?
The start of the off season was great for me. It was a chance for me to rest physically, but it gave me an opportunity to tap into, you know, the other passions and other projects that, you know, I like to be involved in. And Donnie and I had talked about doing a podcast amidst our conversations during the season, because he's my mental coach as well. And we wanted to pursue that and began to, you know, put some strategy together and go after that. And, you know, I'm still going after my music and stuff like that and working out foundation activities. So it was I've still been really busy ever since the season ended.
Darren Waller joining us. I like that. So tell me again, reset me, Darren. Who is your mental coach and what does a mental coach do for you?
So my mental coach, his name is Donnie Starkins. He's located in Scottsdale, Arizona. So for me, he helps walk me through not only my mental process going to the field, but also through life. And, you know, he just helps provide honesty in all situations of my life to, you know, for me to not go into any situation with fear or uncertainty or trying to perform, but it's all about, you know, just being in love with the process of things and finding meaning in my life, regardless of the results. Because if I live a life of meaning and purpose, the results of my life will take care of themselves.
I think that is so powerful. We could do hours on that alone, but I appreciate that response. Darren Waller is joining us. You know, in terms of the season, and I want to get into some of these things off the field in a minute, but in terms of the season, again, it was remarkable in the sense that you ended the year with 4 100-yard games in your final 5 games. You had that 13-reception, 200-yard game against the Jets. The season overall may not have ended the way you would have liked, but as you look back on that season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I look back and see you know, the training and the time that I put in paying off, because you always want to, as time goes along and as things, you know, get tougher and more adversity comes, you want to keep getting better despite that. And I felt like my play continued to improve throughout the season. You know, still not all the way there as a complete player like I think I could be, but, you know, I felt like I was continuing to get better in my habits, and my convictions didn't waver as the season went along. And but as a team, you know we can do better. We know that we have to focus on the smaller details of the game and of the way we're going about doing things. So it's just something to build upon going into this year.
Darren Waller is joining us. So I mentioned your podcast and the foundation at the very top because of the work that you've done in terms of telling your story and becoming a role model. I want to get into the story in a moment. But overall, why is your story something that you want people to know, that you want to share, and that you want them to draw inspiration from?
I feel like people can connect to my story because I feel like, you know, no matter what our backgrounds or no matter what we find ourselves involved in, the common thing that we as people share is adversity. And, I feel like I've had to overcome a lot of adversity in my life up to this point. And I know that it'll still be the case, going forward in my life. So I would like people to look at my story and say, man, he fell, you know, a ton of times. He messed up so many times, but he still was able to turn his life around and not only live a life that he enjoys, but live a life that is now able to inspire other people. So I want people to think that no matter where they are in life, they're still capable of living a life like that.
So we're talking to Darren Waller. You know, even though you've shared parts of your story in the past, I want to be very respectful because it can be very difficult to talk about for some people and to fully, truly understand how far you've come. If you were to go back, you grew up outside of Atlanta. What was your life like growing up?
Yeah, growing up in Atlanta, it was, you know, it looked great on paper. You know, we were in the suburbs. You know, my parents emerged from rougher environments when they were children to provide a better environment for me and my sister. So I had both my parents and good guidance at home. But, you know, in the community I found myself in, I didn't feel like I fit in from the jump. Like, the first people I made friends with, you know, were white. They weren't my skin color, but that wasn't my choice. Like, they were just people that were outside playing sports, and I liked doing that too. So I used to get made fun of for that, and there's a lot of things that made me feel insecure about who I was. And from a young age, I felt like I had to overcompensate for that. I had to make you approve of me. I had to make you want me. I had to make you like me. And that led me to doing, you know, pretty extreme things and left me feeling, you know, empty inside and having a void that I thought only drugs and alcohol could fill. And in the beginning, I thought I was filling that void, but as time went along, I was only making that void deeper. So growing up for me was just a lot of confusion and a lot of just feeling like I didn't belong or that I wasn't enough.
Darren Waller is joining us. I mean, it's such a candid response. You started drinking when you were 16. You became addicted to painkillers and so on. How much of that was about trying to fit in, about trying to feel accepted? A lot of things that people that age try to deal with. Is that how you were trying to cope?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, drugs and alcohol did two things for me. They allowed me to, one, to numb everything that I was feeling and to avoid those feelings I didn't want to feel. At the same time, it got me into those friend groups. It got me into those parties. It got me, you know, into those settings where I couldn't get before because I was, you know, kind of a nerd. I was socially awkward. But now they saw that I was, you know, participating in what they were participating in. They were more, you know, willing to invite me to come around. So it was just, you know, like that. So it was like a double-edged sword for me, honestly.
Darren Waller is joining us and talking very candidly. Now, the amazing thing is you're dealing with this and you're having success, though. I mean, you're playing really, really well, and the scholarship offers are coming in. And from the outside, it seems like everything's great. And then you get to the NFL and you're drafted by the Ravens. What was the start of your career like? I mean, was that fun, or did you feel a huge weight still and a huge burden and pressure?
You know, immense weight and pressure. I remember when I got drafted, you know, it was supposed to be like the greatest day of your life, but I could honestly see my demise coming on draft day. And it was just, you know, because I could feel like I didn't have the tools or the mental outlook to be able to handle that kind of pressure. And so, you know, people talk about that rookie wall. I hit that rookie wall in OTAs. You know, I couldn't catch a pass because I was psyching myself out. I was lining up and saying, don't drop this, don't drop this, instead of having confidence in myself saying, you know, nobody can stop me. There's no way I'm not catching everything. Like, I didn't have that mindset. So early on, you know, I feel like my mind was what drove me, you know, deeper into, you know, my downward spiral.
We were talking to Darren Waller. So, Darren, like, where were you with relation to football at that point? I mean, did you even really want to play football at that point?
Absolutely not. It was just like a chore, really. It was the thing that, you know, when I was that young kid that growing up in the South where football is religion, I was like, I know people will accept me if I play football. And I got so caught up in that, making sure that happened, you know, it took the joy of the game away from me. So when things got tough and things, you know, you had to focus on the mundane things and doing extra, you know, I wasn't about that because all I wanted was the image and I wanted people to approve of me. I wasn't in it for the love of the game. That had been, you know, taken from me, and you know, I kind of pushed that joy away some myself.
We're talking to Darren Waller, and you talk about this in the first episode of your podcast, and you're extremely open about that too. So August 11th, Darren, 2017 is the day you've called the lowest point. What happened that day, and what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, August 11th, 2017. You know, I was getting ready to move out of my apartment in Baltimore because, you know, I had been suspended 2 months prior for a year. And so I was going to go home and move with my parents. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to get high one last time. And, you know, got some pills and they weren't what I was expecting. And, you know, I overdosed in my car in a grocery store parking lot, which was, you know, right around the corner from the team practice facility. And, you know, so that was just, you know, a pivotal day for me, a day that finally scared me and shook me enough to think like, all right, yeah, like I'm not really in control like I thought I was. Like I always thought I could get over on you. I always thought I could, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes and that I was okay, like I was making this happen. But, you know, the addiction had me by the throat. I did not have it in control.
All right, so this is Rock Bottom, you OD. Now, the podcast is Comeback Stories. So very clearly, and I laid out all the credentials at the top, you have come back. Now, you might be, in your mind, a work in progress. You could still get better. But in and of itself, it's an amazing comeback. Exactly how were you able to change your personal story? How did you turn this into a comeback story? What was the process? How did you go about doing that?
I think first was removing me from every, you know, commitment or everything that I thought I had to be a part of in my life, like removing me from football, removing me from relationships, removing me from friendships, removing me from activities so I could just be still and focus on myself and healing myself and looking at the wounds that were inside of me that I was still carrying around and not only hurting myself, but hurting other people with. And once I was able to sit there and, you know, go through them and, you know, get them out, have a positive outlet for them, be honest, be open, and, you know, start to feel the healing from that. That was when I was able to, you know, see the vision that, you know, my higher power has for me to, you know, live a life, like I said, of purpose and meaning. Like, okay, like I'm really meant to do great things here. I'm not meant to be like other people. I'm not meant to live an average life. And so once I was able to sift through all those things that I didn't like about myself, I was able to see more of the things that I did like about myself and build upon those going forward.
Amazing. Raiders tight end Darren Waller joining us. Then you took a job at Sprouts and you were stocking shelves. For years, you had been told how awesome you were, how great you were, how special you were. But at this point, you are stocking shelves. What was that experience like?
Wow. Yeah, that was a humbling experience I needed, honestly. It was, you know, it was very interesting. You know, there's a lot of people in there that would like, there would be a few people that recognized me and like wondering why I was working there. And there were people that just saw that I was big and they would be like, why aren't you on the field somewhere? And then I would see like people I went to school with, you know, girls I used to talk to in there, and I would be like in there kind of trying to hide, you know, until like I kind of realized that, you know, I have nothing to be ashamed of here. I'm living life with the best way I know how and the most honest way I can. And that experience helped me now to be able to handle success better. Like, I don't think I'm, you know, this great thing or that I'm better than other people, because I remember the times where, you know, I was passed out in my car. I remember the times where I was stocking the shelf at Sprouts making under $12 an hour. So that experience, you know, really was pivotal as far as, you know, my life taken to another level.
Darren Waller telling a story. You know, it seems to me there's no way you could do something like this by yourself, of course. And you've talked about the role your father, Dorian, played in your life in terms of being a role model and having unconditional love for you. Back in 2019, he told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, quote, "We've seen the light come back in our son's eyes," end of quote. I mean, to me, that's a beautiful statement. What's it mean to hear your father say that and to have that kind of unconditional love between a father and son?
Yeah, it means a lot to me because, you know, my dad has been there through a lot of things, everything really, and things that the public has seen, things the public hasn't seen. And, you know, his faith in me and what I could, you know, do and become never wavered. He always was speaking positivity into my life, even when, you know, I wasn't trying to hear it or I was stuck on a narrative that was the opposite. And, you know, for him to say that and see that really means that, you know, he sees the work that I've been doing and he respects the work that I've been doing. And, you know, that's the only, as far as approval from people on this earth, you know, he's one of the only few people that I really, you know, lean on their approval.
Hey, listen, you might not want my approval, but I'm going to give you my approval. And I'll tell you why. I think it's amazing that you've done the work, the hard work, and you've turned your life around. And I can imagine where somebody might do something like that and not want to share the details of that work or share that story. And I would respect that. I mean, it's personal. At the same time, this is exactly what you're doing. You have a foundation. You have a podcast. You're now in a position where you can help other people, and you are an inspiration. How does it feel to be in that position?
It's honestly crazy to be here just because, you know, I was living a life before that was pretty much the opposite of inspiration. And I was not trying to be, like, I had no plans of being this open about what I had gone through. But, you know, it's just something that I feel like is bigger than me. If it was about serving me, I would be quiet. I would go about my life and not tell anything to people. But I feel like, you know, the greatest joy I can have in this life is, you know, being of service to other people. So I just try to keep them in mind when, you know, I may feel, you know, down or may feel tempted or I may feel, you know, anything, but I know that it's bigger than me. Other people are relying on me, so I take pride in that, and you know, I don't take their struggle lightly because they're looking at me for inspiration, and I want to be able to give that to them.
So, I mean, obviously, this is bigger than football, but before I let you go, if I were to bring it back to football, you were named to the Pro Bowl this year. When you consider the road that you've traveled and all the work that you put in both on and off the field, what's it mean to you to reach the Pro Bowl?
It's you know, it's something I still can't even put into words. You know, I can't really even fully wrap my mind around it still. But it's amazing to, you know, be in that element, to be amongst the best, and, you know, just have your work speak for itself. And I just want to continue to maintain that level of consistency for my team and for the fans.
Hey, Darren, do you, like, mentally, do you still doubt yourself at times? Do you still feel doubt? Do you still fight doubt? And if so, how do you process that?
Yeah, I still go through periods of doubt. I mean, there's, you know, I could have a 200-yard a game, and then, like, that Wednesday at practice, I'm like, all right, now, like, you know, there may be a certain pass or where a certain ball comes that's, like, I'm not very – still not that confident in, but it's like, you know, I don't necessarily try to, you know, strangle the doubt or run away from the doubt. I just try to let it come in and realize, like, you know, there's no merit to it. I'm just afraid of, you know – I'm not more so afraid of catching that pass. I'm more so afraid of what people are going to think of me. So when I know that, I can remove myself from what people are thinking, and I'm just more free and fluid to play the game. So I still have doubt, but I just like to trace the doubt to the root of it and realize that it usually doesn't have to do with anything in real life. It just has to do with what's going on in my head.
Darren Waller, my guest. So let me finally ask you, if somebody is listening right now and they're dealing with addiction issues or they're feeling trapped and they feel like they have no hope and they don't know what to do, what would you tell that person?
I'd probably ask them a question. I would ask them, you know, who's in your circle? Who is your community? Because when you're trying to go about this thing by yourself and keeping everything bottled in and not speaking on it, You know, you're not allowing wisdom to come into your life. You're not allowing, you know, transformation to come into your life. So I would just challenge them to get people around them that they can be honest with, because once you let those things out, let those secrets out, let those dark moments out, you know, there's healing involved in that. There's a weight being lifted off of you, and you can't do that on your own. You know, I was trying to do it on my own at first, and I'm telling you, it doesn't work. So get people around you that are on a similar path, that have a like-minded vision for you, and that are invested in you just as a human being, and I promise it'll change for you.
What an absolutely powerful statement and a powerful conversation, and just the one we needed on a day like this. He is the co-host of the Comeback Stories podcast. You want to find that. The founder of the Darren Waller Foundation. He was the 204th pick overall coming out of Georgia Tech. He is a Pro Bowler. Darren, much respect. I really, really appreciate you. I really appreciate your willingness to share that message and that story. I can't imagine how many people that may have helped today. Thank you so much for that, and great to have you on the show, Darren. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Be kind. Rewind. Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. What's cracking? Hope you had a great weekend. My name is Jim Rome.
Probably wondering, what do you got for us today, Rome?
Got a lot of show.
Good show, dude.
Good show, dude.
Really good show.
Really?
Did you really think that on this Monday I would start with some MMA? If you have slept on Kamaru Usman, that's on you, not on him.
Yeah! That's it!
Usman is running on some premium fuel and looking for the next thing. Jorge Masvidal.
I'm going to put him in a coffin this time.
Dana, I will even spring for the coffin.
He don't want that fight.
It's a good coffin to run you these days.
Email.
Two laptops. Who are you? Me? Signed Derek Jeter. You know why I've got two?
Because one of them doesn't work.
One took a big dump in his pants.
Where is that game there?
Jordan Palmer.
The top movers in the league, meaning the guys who move the most efficiently. No wasted movement. The two best movers in the league are Kyler Murray and Tom Brady. And how ironic is that?
And you really had nothing to do with it. Everybody loved it. Nobody's mad except you. And now you're losing sleep and embarrassing yourself over the corn dog of sports trophies. Not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Clark Lee.
Listen, it's always been a dream of mine to be on the jungle.
Jungle was rocking.
I couldn't be more excited about this.
And he's limping.
AD, what's good, baby?
Good news is your season is not over. Bad news, it got way more challenging. Ben Colbert.
This could actually be good for him. After that short turnaround from the bubble, he can come back and look even better than he did to start the season.
Four wells requesting a COVID test rectally.
Wow, Johnny, even for you, that call sucked. Wrecked him. Damn near killed him. What about that call work?
I want to do this on
JJ.
Video.
JJ! Be a part of America's team. Go to Cleveland. Let's go out and win this whole damn thing together.
What's so good about Cleveland?
Their team, their chemistry, their talent, their culture, their coaching staff, DeForest Buckner. Do you actually like doing the workout?
I like what they do for me. I'd much rather be on a beach sipping a margarita or something, but those are the things that you got to do.
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad. Take me a nice fat.
But man, that is some really raw graphic commentary. I need more. Marshawn Lynch, if you need him.
I'm just about that action, boss.
Talking to Michael McDowell.
The ride's worth it. The journey's worth it. I mean, I've had my teeth kicked in and my face pushed in the mud. Just crazy.
You don't have an inalienable right to be on this show. You're probably on hold right now going, dang, he is lighting those fools up, but I know he's not talking about me. Well, I'm talking about you.
Uh-oh.
Argel, you're in the clear.
Pronounced Argel, it's French.
Eric Musselman.
JR, great talking with you. Thanks for having me in the jungle. Hey, we got to set a date, man. Got to go to Pacific Beach, grab a burrito, and watch the Padres sometime this summer.
We were looking for Jimmy Butler.
Woof. I can do my guy Jimmy B like that.
Oh, that's Johnny's girlfriend. She's about to learn that not everything is bigger in Texas.
Nice production value, though, Russ. Willie Mack III is joining us. You were sleeping in your car and using borrowed clubs.
It was a struggle at that time, lowest in my career, so just always remember what my dad sacrificed to get me to where I am. I never gave up.
Beef jerky segment.
Anyone that whines and cries about not seeing Bruno Mars is a bitch.
Hello, my beef is talk show hosts who hang up on nice guys named Wayne, not Todd.
My beef is with grown men that wear pajamas in public.
Why do I have to cut a stick of butter in half, melt it, and pour it over the popcorn? I shouldn't have to do that.
The fact alone, any two-legged man.
Peter DeBoer is my guest. What about Saturday? It's going to be outdoors at Lake Tahoe.
You know, everybody reverts back to childhood memories and nostalgia when we play outdoors. And that's how everybody grew up.
Hey, Rome,
They wanted to syndicate me, not you, but I didn't want to do it. I'm the reason you are you. You're welcome, Van Smack.
Scoreboard, I win. You lose.
San Diego.
Emailed.
Why don't you explain to them how damn difficult it was to watch a good porno on dial-up internet? The younger generations today do not know how easy they have it.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Taylor. Great job.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Rit.
Do not do that.
Uh-oh.
I swear to God, if you do that again, you're fired.
I apologize. This one was all on me. That being said.
Dude, don't you wreck an apology with a that being said.
Ridiculous, right?
I don't know how he got that to go.
Hello, Diane. Nice to have you, Diane. How are you?
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Lady clone.
Oh, my God. Go ahead, Diane.
You're cheaper than therapy and actually better.
Jesus Christ.
I so badly want to name that horse Noah Vosen.
Noah Vosen.
I'm talking to Darren Waller.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to get high one last time. Got some pills, and they weren't what I was expecting. And overdosed in my car in the grocery store parking lot, which was right around the corner from the team practice facility. The addiction had me by the throat. I did not have it in control.
Lighten up, Francis.
What'd that cost you to join? $500?
It's a dynasty club.
Knock it off.
You knock it off, QB1.
Jim, appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Oh,
200 on a 50-yard field, like was that?
Literally.
Good night now.